Hey, hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of Point to Point. It is the show from 70% Complete, where we try to get from one point to another and try to get to the point. Today's point. Well, today's point number one is one of those silly canopy things that it's a propane heater canopy dealio. It's all crumpled up on the side of the road here. How'd that happen, do you think? Probably excessive winds. Who knows? Point number two. So we're still in the week of post PAX coverage stuff. We're recording the Content Mill episode tonight for PAX impressions, all of that fun stuff. I think that will be coming out next week, perhaps. Just to keep the fun rolling. But what I wanted to kind of talk about is something I will probably not mention on that episode. And it was kind of a thing that kind of bubbled up just from walking around the floor, looking around, and also just kind of chatting with a couple of folks. And it's surprise, surprise, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but it is public funding for video games. It was kind of shocking a little bit, walking around the show floor and seeing different, you know, big banner booths and tiny ones too, that had little, you know, funded by the cultural arts program of this country that I'm from. It was kind of shocking, mostly because you start to look at, you know, that stuff and you start to see the scale of some of these games, the scale of the teams, which I think is probably more indicative of what's going on here, and the amount of them. I was kind of surprised by the international showing at the at PAX. It was kind of surprising. Last year, you could tell that there was some trepidation about coming to the United States. I think you could still kind of feel that this year, although I think it was a little... I think there was a good chunk of white Europeans who were able to make it and it wasn't a problem. I did not see very many, you know, Latin America or South American devs there, which, surprise, surprise. The thing, though, that is kind of striking to me is that as I was walking around the floor, and the ones that are jumping out to me right now are two games that I really enjoyed on the show floor, Golfle. G-O-L-F-L-E. It's like Wordle, but golf. And Valor Mortis are the two that are jumping out at me. You know, that this is like key to their story, I think. Because each one of these games, and there are a handful of others that I saw, had on their booths little bugs that said, hey, this Valor Mortis is partly funded by the Cultural Council of Poland. Or when I was speaking to the dev of Golfle, he mentioned that they could not have made it to the United States from Tasmania in Australia. They could not have made it to the United States and like made this game without the public funding given to them by the government of Tasmania. And I think that is something that, as we look at costs rising everywhere, as we look at the development class of video games kind of being pretty much wholesale gutted, you know, we just saw another studio closure last week. We saw, I think, what was I seeing? Crystal Dynamics, perhaps, is laying off another 100 people. We saw Epic lay off 1,000 developers last week. The layoffs have not stopped in the pursuit of maximizing profits, and I really don't think they will stop for a while yet. Hopefully it will slow, but that doesn't seem to be happening. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said about why that is happening. You know, industry set on endless growth is unsustainable. You know, surprise, surprise. In order to make shareholders happy, you have to, you know, have big quarterly end of year results. And the easiest way to do that, unfortunately, is to get rid of people. So I think that there's only so much you can really do with with public funding. But it is kind of shocking that there is no public funding for video games in the United States. There's no grant process, at least as far as I know. There's no arts program at the federal level that is funding American culture through video games. Which is interesting when, you know, I think the general consensus is that the United States is one of, if not, I don't necessarily believe that it is the best video game publisher in the world, but, you know, I'm sure some people will say that. There is a vast amount of jobs, even reduced as it is now, in the United States for video game development, and, you know, most other nations that have that, you know, Poland is the one that jumps out at me because, holy cow, there's a lot of video game devs in Poland. But the nation has seemed to, you know, at least fund some of those projects, to subsidize some of those projects, because they are, you know, cultural exports, and they're also a large amount of the economy of Poland. So it behooves Poland to keep those jobs in Poland to make sure that those companies, you know, are able to find success to some degree. And, you know, perhaps that brings more people to Poland. Perhaps it brings more money to Poland. All of those good incentives. I think that works at, like, the massive level when, you know, to me, like, you have a pretty decent amount of people there. You have, like, Valor Mortis is, you know, Poland had 6 games there. There was a Aztec survival game. There was a tactics game. There's Valor Mortis. And then, unfortunately, there's 3 other games on the other side of the booth that I didn't really look at. But, like, a vastly different style of game coming out of there, you know? The Aztec game was a survival crafting game in, you know, during the Spanish conquest of Mexico and Latin America. Like, that is very different than Napoleonic first-person Souls-like Valor Mortis, and that's very different than Order Automata, I think is what the tactics game was called, which was a, you know, pixel art tactics game. And all of them were there under the banner of the, I'm going to get the phrasing wrong, but basically the cultural organization of Poland. And so you look at that and you say, okay, like, what does that say? And I think it says a lot, that these small teams of varying sizes are able to make very different games with the support of their country. I didn't speak to the team from One More Level or the other teams that worked on those the Poland games too closely about this, but the guy who was running Golful and I'm really blanking on the student's name. I think her name was, I'm going to get it wrong, so I'm not going to say it. Both of them were mentioning how the full development of those games would not have occurred had the cultural group, had the arts grants not panned out. And it was fun to talk to the professor of, he was the game design professor for the University of Tasmania. And talk to him a little bit about, like, he had, like, this intense story about how much he loved Golf on Mars and Desert Mars, or a Desert Golf, and he made this game. Like, he wanted to make this daily golf game that is basically, you know, desert golfing but in a cave. And this passion project that seems really cool and probably will, you know, not make a ton of money. it's kind of fascinating to just, like, see the level of creation that's capable of happening when your government, like, the government, your tax dollars are able to support that growth. It's truly fascinating to see that, like, this person, like, a developer with probably a couple of his friends sat down to make this cool game because they really had a good idea and wanted to give it a go, They did. They were able to fly to PAX to support that halfway across the world. And, you know, he was quite clear that, like, this was not going to be a life-changing project for him. He just wanted to make this game. And Australia said, yeah, sure, go for it. And I find that fascinating because, you know, as we see the growth of indies, as we see, like, the closure of Ivy Road, the team behind WanderStop, like, to me, WanderStop is kind of the perfect example of a game that could have had grant money behind it that perhaps could have sustained that a little bit better. And unfortunately, that studio is closing now. Like, it's shutting down. But this is also something that when we look at, I think French games have this, as well as Canadian games, Danish games, I've seen a couple of those as well. Like, there is a substantial amount of indie video games that we all love to play that are subsidized in some form by their home country's government. And it, as we, you know, obviously this is, America is not a country that is happy with funding the arts currently. It's barely happy with funding education. But I think that as we kind of look forward to what happens to games when we talk about Project Helix and the new PlayStation 6 that will cost $1,000, mainstream console gaming is being pushed out of the reach of most people. And, you know, PC components continue to go up, although maybe there is hope there still. The pursuit of the latest and greatest gaming is going to continue to be pushed out of the reach of most people in gaming. And so we're kind of left with, you know, what our slightly aging hardware can run, which is most things, honestly. But it's this burgeoning indie scene that continues to publish game after game after game. And I think that, you know, I was overhearing someone talk about how, I don't want to put words in their mouth. I'm pretty sure it is the dev of Jig Rift, which I will be talking about on the Content Mill episode, which is a puzzle platformer kind of in like the Spyro the Dragon style, except at any point you can zoom out and reposition world tiles like they're jigsaw puzzles. It is a wild-looking video game, but the person who was there at the booth was mentioning that, like, yeah, I would be absolutely over the moon if this game sold 30,000 copies. Like, that is an extravagant success for me, and would allow me to continue making more video games. And, like, 30,000 is a lot, you know? It will take you a long time to count from 0 to 30,000, but It is kind of fascinating to me that, like, someone is there at PAX, that they've got this, you know, they've got a PlayStation there, that they have a station to play at. And they have this really unique, cool-looking idea, and all they need to do is sell enough copies that is equal to, like, a somewhat small city in the United States. To be able to, like, pay their rent, pay their bills, and continue working on the next project. And I think that, you know, when we talk about, you know, the whole Sonic meme of, you know, what is it? You know the one. Shorter games made by more people paid better, et cetera, et cetera. I think the way to fill that gap, at least to some extent, or the way that makes that realistic and possible for a lot of international devs is public funding. Using tax dollars to fund the culture of your nation, to fund the creativity of your nation. I think that there are a lot of problems in general in the United States, and I think that it is a real bummer that a lot of these people cannot create a successful, not like extravagantly successful, just simply able to pay their rent and buy groceries level of success on this art that is like truly life-changing to a lot of people based on the thing that they're really good at. And you have to, like, get funding for an extravagant amount of dollars because you have to make, you know, 10x that back to get money from private firms or from, you know, equity or funders or investors. And instead, I think a lot of the countries around us have, you know, a little bit better expectations around that, specifically because, you know, here is grant money. Like, this is money set aside for the artistic uses in our nation. Please use this money, make something cool, and, you know, maybe some of that comes back to the country. Instead of having to, you know, I was seeing that there are, I can't remember the dev's name. This is a lot of can't remember stuff today. But they are having to shutter their project and close their studio because this might actually have been Ivy Road, the Deaths for Wonderstop. They had a second game or another game coming out, and they couldn't find funding because it was, you know, people were wanting crazy stuff off of the funding of that game, whatever the next game was. And I think that the perfect stopgap for that, or at least like a better stopgap for that, is the usage of public funding. It just kind of struck me how much, as I was walking around the show floor, it was like, oh yeah, like this one is like funded by the Canadian Film Council. And oh, this is the Film and Arts Council of Denmark. Like, it is wild how much just walking around. And if you look at the key art, you will see the developer's name, you'll see the publisher's name, and often you will see the country's art council on there, either because they, you know, provided funding for the game, they provided funding for travel, or they provided, you know, space and resources for those devs, which, you know, when we talk about how much money it takes to make a video game, it's even an independent, like, teeny tiny one with, you know, a handful of devs, every dollar counts, and it is continuing to be baffling to me that as we watch the American video game industry fall to pieces before our very eyes because of, you know, corporate structures and the capitalism run rampant, this is the time when we could have had, you know, a stopgap that is helping create unique creative things, and instead, you know, here we are. So, public funding, folks. If I wasn't quick enough on it, hitting the volume button when I started this episode, you probably heard some NPR. You know, support your local radio station because there is no public funding for local radio stations anymore. Support video games. There is no public funding for those video games. As Warner continues to do its merger business for the world's largest merger or whatever the fuck, like, there is no public funding for any of these things in the United States. It is so rare to get grant money for creative projects. And that simply is not the case in other countries. And I think that that is a grand failing of the United States. I think it's a failing of the support of arts and culture here. It's a failing of supporting video games. And if you don't see that those three things are the same thing, man, I'm sorry that that's how you feel, but maybe investigate that a little bit. But that's going to do it for me. That's today's episode. You know, someday maybe we will have public funding in this country. Hopefully we will get there at like a large enough scale to help some of these devs who have nowhere else to go right now. But have a good rest of your day. Happy Tuesday. And we'll see you next time. Bye.